I've done absolutely nothing.
Well, we're back with the seventh episode of the Super Bayern podcast after an exciting week for Bayern Munich fans. I'm Benjamin Scott, and I'm joined this week by Tim Richards.
Hello.
And Sebastian Zimmerman.
Hi.
Well, this week, the three of us will be dissecting Bayern's 5-1 win over Benfica, as well as their less impressive 2-1 win over Werder Bremen. We'll discuss how Bayern Munich can best put to use their war chest next summer and look at some very big news that came from a certain Mr. Wembley earlier this week. Let's start with Bayern's two games, shall we? Because I wasn't really able to watch all of them both this past week, so I've actually got a lot of genuine questions of my own about how things went. And let's start with the 5-1 win at Benfica, where Arjen Robben scored twice, I believe. I think Robert Lewandowski also scored twice. Just overall a really good game from Bayern Munich, from everything I saw watching the highlights, watching the match kind of on and off as I was. What went right for Bayern Munich this time that's really been missing out for most of the season?
I have to say, probably my opinion is not shared by everyone on this, but I did not enjoy the 5-1 victory as much as I did the 2-1 victory, actually. Not that they played worse necessarily, but yeah, I think the 2-1 victory was going the right direction and might be more sustainable than the 5-1 was. Robin was just dominating. I think very much of that really comes down to Arjen Robben playing the best he can, which is pretty good still. But I think we just cannot go on and rely on that, because even Arjen Robben will not be able to play like that every week. So, yeah, it was a great game, of course. It was a great game, but I don't know. It might have been 2-2 without Arjen Robben, I would say.
Yeah, I think it's a large part of it does come down to the fact that both Robben and Ribery, for all of his criticisms in recent months, he was also very, very good against Benfica. This was Bayern playing as if it was 2013 again, which was very welcome to see. But obviously, it's not something, Sebastian, as you said, it's not something that can be sustained. I remember reading on Reddit afterwards a number of people saying, okay, but Benfica were really bad. And they were. There's no real way of like arguing against that. They really did not play well. But there's a difference between a team that wins 2-0 against a team that plays really badly and a team that keeps on getting more and more and more. And that's something that we've not seen much of Bayern. I want to say in the last few years, actually. I don't think this is really a Kovac problem. This has been a problem that Bayern have had, where they've got the lead and they've kind of just been fine with it. So we saw Bayern get the lead, keep the lead and build on it. The one hiccup was Benfica scoring right from the kickoff of the second half. But then the response was adequate. It was exactly what Bayern needed. They kept scoring more goals. So 5 goals against a very bad Benfica. Okay, a very bad Benfica, but 5 goals is still 5 goals, and I don't think you can dismiss that.
Yeah, well, you kind of answered one of my questions. I was going to ask if Bayern were actually that good, or if Benfica were really just that bad. But kind of sounds like a little bit of a mixture of both. Looking at the Benfica lineup, they were playing most of their best players. But I do want to go ahead and jump ahead, because you both kind of echoed the same thought that the Werder Bremen, the 2-1 win then over the weekend, was a bit more, I guess, not necessarily impressive, but more important and really stood out more. And why is that?
Yeah, that is because we really played a different kind of football. I guess I will repeat what I've said a lot of times in the past. We should not just rely on having two excellent wingers, because we don't really have two excellent wingers anymore, at least not on a week-to-week basis. We have Arjen Robben, who is really excellent a lot of the time, and we have Franck Ribery, who is not so excellent anymore, especially in the way we would need, probably. He played well, I think, against Benfica, but he did not play as well as Ian Robin, and I think he would not have played as well if not for Ian Robin on the other side. So, yeah. The other game, the 2-1 against Bremen, was really what I wanted to see. More flexibility. Serge Gnabry really coming into his own, really playing well, playing more through the middle. Thomas Müller had a much better game, I think, also on the weekend, which I think we need. I think Thomas Müller should be an integral part of the of this team going forward. So, yeah. That we just only have one really excellent winger, just one Ian Robin. Right now, we have Kingsley Coman. Yeah, let's see how much time he will need to really be as well as we would like him to be. So yeah, we just don't have the players to play that kind of robbery style offense. That just doesn't work.
Yeah, I think building upon that, I want to describe the Werder Bremen game is like reassuringly average. So if I could explain what I mean by that, it was a display of what we can expect to see. So we've seen Bayern have really good games, like the game that they played against, Wolfsburg? It was probably the best that they had played. And then we thought, okay, good, step in the right direction. You've got the victory. Let's build on that. And then it was back to draws and defeats again. I think this was like a step in the right. I think this was, to repeat myself, for maybe the fifth time this season, this was the step in the right direction that Bayern needed. It showed, okay, something is actually changing here. You can see that Kovac had a clear idea. You kind of saw that when Coman came on. So Serge Gnabry started on the right wing with Ribery on the left. Ribery came off. Gnabry went to the left wing and Coman went on the right wing. Whether he thought maybe Gnabry's a better dribbler, maybe we can exploit the left flank slightly more. It showed, I can't really describe it in a way that sounds promising, but watching it, I thought, okay, everything's going to be okay. Like, it wasn't absolutely spellbinding, but it was enough to see that, yeah, this isn't in doubt at the moment.
One thing that really stands out to me from the Werder Bremen match, looking at the stats or at the way the match played out, Bayern went up early and then conceded about 15-20 minutes later, and it really looked like oh no, we're gonna go right back into that same pattern that, you know, we've had all season of scoring, looking good early, and then letting a team come back and rattle us. But they came back, you know, in the second half, and Serge Gnabry scored like almost immediately right after that. They responded really well, similarly to the way they did against Benfica. And yeah, I would have to agree. I think in the Bundesliga, especially, being able to hold on to a 2-1 lead is, you know, that's really huge. A lot of fans will complain that, you know, you're only winning 2-1. Why aren't we going for more? But, you know, being able to close out those games away from home and get those important points, that seems like a really big deal to me. And since Garrett's not here, I'll bring up the expected goals because I know he probably would. But Bayern had an expected goals of 3.37 against Werder Bremen, and Werder Bremen had an expected goal of 0.66, according to understat.com. So this is probably one of those matches where the statistics actually tell the story of the game a bit more than the game actually tells its own story. I want to look at something that is a bit worrying, I guess, and that's the fact that Bayern weren't able to keep a clean sheet in either of these two performances. I wasn't watching at either point when the goals came, so I was able to see them in the highlights, obviously, but were those mostly just those same individual mistakes, those lapses in concentration that we've been seeing all season, or you think there's more to them than that?
The Bremen goal was... I'll defend him I'll defend him to the blood. But this was very much on Neuer. You saw Boateng and Süle almost like move out of the way for the ball, and Neuer just completely misjudged it. It's like he was he was off by about like a foot and a half, maybe, which very uncharacteristic. So it is an individual mistake, but it's not. This is definitely on Neuer, because obviously, like, he's conceded a lot of goals already this season. And you think, okay, maybe people are just getting lucky against him and they're breaking through the defense. Maybe it's a defense problem. This was 100% on him in my mind.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you get on Twitter, basically everyone says the opposite. Everyone's really quick to assault Jerome Boateng. And basically, I don't know, it's kind of the thing right now for Bayern Twitter to kind of bash Jerome Boateng. I'm not entirely sure why. But if you watch the replay, like, Boateng is doing his job. He looks like he's about to go up for the challenge and then ducks out at the last minute. And that, there's only really one explanation for that, and that's if Manuel Neuer called him off and basically said, you know, this one's mine, I got it. And you could also tell by Neuer's reaction. He didn't yell at his defenders. He looked really disappointed in himself. So you'd have to say, yeah, that one is probably on him. What do you think about the Benfica goal?
Should I take this one?
If you can. I try to remember it right now.
It was a very forgetful goal. That's the problem. That was a lapse in concentration. This was immediately as the second half started, and Benfica, they brought a new player on. I can't remember who it was. They brought him on, and he ran very quickly at the Bayern defence. It was like two or three passes, and all of a sudden he was through on goal, and then he scored. Kovac's quote was, "Oh, we played really well for 90 minutes." No, we played really well for about 89 and a half. Because, like, that short break right at the very start of the second half, at that point it was like 2-1, I think. I can't remember what the score was, but it was at the point where you thought, okay, we've seen this several times before already this season. That wasn't individual mistakes. This was team mentality. But then the reverse of that, the mentality completely switched, and Bayern responded really, really positively. Very forgetful goal.
I think in a lot of ways, there were some things that I really quite liked about the defensive performance. Most importantly, I think David Alaba. David Alaba has played, I think, his best two games probably in these last two against Benfica and Werder Bremen. And one of those was even without Franck Ribéry. I think we all agreed that he was one of the few players who played better when Franck Ribéry was on the pitch, which he was against Benfica, but wasn't, I think, against Werder Bremen. I think that was quite interesting that Alaba really played better than we are used to in this season, I guess.
If there's one thing that I kind of noticed during the Bremen game and large stretches of the Benfica game, Bayern were defending in numbers, which was a really welcome change to see. So it was quite evident that the Bremen team was, or the team that faced Bremen, was lined up as a 4-4-1-1. And at times, both Ribéry and Gnabry were like dropping back to defend at like six at the back. And we spoke about this before with Kovac bringing in defensive football. Oh, what a shame this is going to be. It was great because you saw everybody defend. And it was really quite nice to see the sort of tenacity and in a way, anger from everybody. Gnabry was coming back. He was further back than Kimmich was at times. Ribéry, like, again, for all of his criticisms, he was coming back and defending and made several key tackles. The defensive performance from this team was really, really fantastic.
Yeah, and it's not even Ribéry. I was watching at one point, and I noticed Kingsley Coman was defending all the way down by the corner flag. That's something you don't usually expect from him, especially when he's just returned from injury. So I think that there was some clear instruction on Kovac's part to, you know, take care of the issues there. But in a lot of ways, you brought this up, we're kind of seeing the Bayern of the Bayern of old in a way. You talked about Werder Bremen. Against Werder Bremen, we lined up in a 4-4-1-1 or a sort of 4-2-3-1, depending on the situation we were in. And that's something that Kovac said that he wanted to stick with after the Benfica game. He said he's going to kind of go with the double six pivot, bring that back, and kind of scrap the 4-1-4-1 that we've been playing with for most of the season. And what he's done there is moved Joshua Kimmich into midfield, and these past two games paired him up with Leon Goretzka, and it's worked out pretty well, I think. But I want to hear, we were asked on Twitter to talk about this, actually. What do you think of the double six pivot?
Yeah, I think it was a lot of time really a double six, but I think it's quite important that they are not always playing on that same level, because Kimmich obviously is the more defensive mind of those two. But I have to say, Kimmich did impress me also offensively. He made some very good movements. I saw some very good plays on offense by Kimmich, which I was not really expecting. There was this one time when he moved onto the wing really quickly, but I think then he remembered, oh, wait a minute, I'm not playing the same role I used to play. And then he basically went to the middle again. I really liked Kimmich's performance. I think he works quite well, and Goretzka also works quite well. I think the important question will be, what are we going to do once James is back, Thiago is properly back. He is able to play. Maybe he's fit enough. Maybe he's capable to go a full 90 minutes next time. Then I think this will be a tough decision who's going to start the next games here.
Of course, Sebastian, if Kimmich is in midfield, that means you know who is playing at right back.
And yeah, of course.
So, I'm sure
this podcast's favorite player.
Yeah, exactly. Rafinha seems to have done okay for the past two games from what I saw. But he's, especially if he doesn't have, you don't have a backup for him, he's not someone I think you want starting there every week. But I also think Kimmich was very impressive over the past two games. I mean, his ball for Serge Gnabry's first goal against Werder Bremen was sensational. That pass alone right there shows like why he should, or not necessarily why he should, but why he's like such a good midfielder, why he can make such a good midfielder. He's kind of got that Xabi Alonso passing range vision, but he's a bit more mobile and I would say a bit more defensively sound. So I like that a lot. What about the pairing with, you know, Goretzka in midfield?
I think like Goretzka does a very good job of, I think, keeping Kimmich in his place. So as you said, Kimmich does have a tendency to go forward. It's fairly understandable. You need to score goals, and everybody wants to score goals. But obviously, when you're playing as a defensive midfielder, you need to have some sort of stability in where you are. I really liked the pairing. I thought they were both... Kimmich brings more mobility to the defensive midfield position than Martinez does. Martinez has a slightly more of a physical approach because he's about, I think, like 8 inches taller. Maybe not 8 inches, but he's a big guy compared to Kimmich. And so with that, some of that physicality is then kind of moved over to Goretzka. I thought it was a really nice pairing. So we saw it before, and it was okay. But yeah, when you have one player playing, so when you have Kimmich playing in midfield, that does mean that you would play all of your fullbacks at the same time, which is a really dangerous position to be in. It works, but it might not always work. But the pairing of Kimmich and Goretzka, I thought, was great. I think they complement each other really nicely.
All right, so we were asked by me unplugged, me underscore unplugged 20, have our thoughts on Niko Kovac changed after these past two games? So I will go ahead and let you go first, Sebastian.
Yeah, that's a very good question, and I would have to say kind of yes and no. I have more hope again, yeah, but I'm not quite sure. I mean, there were good things. I saw a lot of things I liked, but I'm still not sure if Kovac is really dedicated to go that way, if that's his choice, his plan, or if he's just letting go of the rudder a bit and basically gives them more freedom, lets them do what they feel like, and that just works out. I'm not quite sure. But I definitely feel much better than I felt last week. So I guess it's a yes, but yeah, with a lot of buts and all that. With only one T, of course. because maybe that was the joke. I think maybe it's really good steps in the right direction, but it could just completely disappear next week. I would not be surprised if we would be looking at the same problems we have been talking about week in and week out by the next game. I think that would not really surprise me at all.
Seeing how I missed most of those matches, it's really hard for me to give an answer about, you know, where I stand on Kovac.
But he's flawless.
From what I saw, I liked what I saw from the game. The results really do speak well for him. He showed that he is willing to change. I really like that he put out not exactly the same, but almost the exact same lineup for two matches in a row, kind of saying, you know, this is something I want to stick with. Because so many weeks ago we were talking about how we didn't really care what it was. We just wanted him to come up with a tactic and stick with it. So we're starting to see something that's a step in the right direction, to borrow from Tim. But Tim, I know you listened to the podcast over the week. Hopefully we didn't ruin your holiday too much. What did you think of our thoughts on Kovac? And now, you know, of course, hindsight is 2020. Where do you stand right now?
I thought they were very understandable views. People don't like him. He's a very divisive character. I mean, nobody wants to see a manager that plays the way that Frankfurt did on occasion, somebody that's just going to be pure defensive. So there was always going to be doubts about him when he first arrived. And then the fact that he didn't do that at all and Bayern have been leaking goals. Throughout this entire time, I'm trying to like maintain a very open mind, because I would like to see him. I'd like to see him stay for ages. I think seems like a cool guy. Managerial ability out the window. He seems nice. I completely understand where this reticence comes from, or like this ability to really get behind him. Is what I was saying about the Benfica game. People said, okay, whatever, this result doesn't matter, he still needs to go. I completely understand that, but still, we haven't even reached Christmas of his first season. Like, he could turn it around. Like, we're still in the Champions League, we could still win the league, it's entirely possible. We're still in the cup. He is, all right, it probably won't happen, let's be realistic, but he could win a treble. Like, it's nothing. It's not realistic, I'm aware, but it's entirely possible still. He is in a position where he has clearly got such an uphill battle, and in my mind needs patience. So seeing him, seeing the reports of him being in the dressing room saying, this might be my last game, I just want to do this. And then seeing all of the players rally around that, and seeing the best performances from Robin, Ribery, really great performances from Lewandowski, seeing all of that happen was wonderful, because it shows that the players support him. And now all of these reports of visits to fan clubs, him getting a standing ovation when he got there, whether that's just politeness or not, that's for another day to work out. Maybe they're just being nice. But then seeing James give interviews saying, yeah, I want to work hard, like I'd like to stay here, I've not been playing as much, but hopefully over time that will change. You know, that's quite a diplomatic, probably a stock answer for most players, but seeing the players get behind the coach, I think that would be a big turning point. It's the same with Louis van Gaal dropping his trousers. That's a huge moment for a manager. It's like a watershed moment where something completely changes, like it's a complete curveball, and again, to use Van Gaal, his victory against Juventus, these things could happen. I'm not suggesting that Louis Van Gaal comes back to manage Bayern. It wouldn't be awful, But again, let's just use this current manager and see.
So this was the third time, right?
Yeah.
This sorry, was the what?
Time bringing up Louis van Gaal, I think.
I'm just hoping that someone's gonna. Well, like Beetlejuice. But like when you guys were talking about potential managers last week, and there's the whole discussion of, oh, we need more youth, we need somebody that's going to be respected, and nobody brought up Louis van Gaal. I genuinely thought that's not such a terrible idea. He's unemployed at the moment. He's a strange man. Maybe that's not going to work in his favour. But no, to summarise it, I get it, but also I think it's important to be patient, like more patient than several months.
Well, now we all know that Tim definitely has a Louis van Gaal shrine set up in his closet full of posters and everything. But no, you talked about the players really buying into Kovac's ideas. And yeah, I mean, they also came out after the game and kind of like explicitly said that we're behind him. Arjen Robben was first. You know, he had a great game. He was interviewed. He said after the Benfica win that, you know, today's game was for the coach. He's like, obviously, we want to win as a team, but this was for the coach. Thomas Muller came out and said basically the exact same thing. He said, of course, this is a good win for us, but also for the coach. Every one of us wants success for the club and wants to show that we stand behind the coach. Manuel Neuer, after I think it was last weekend's draw, basically said if the team would have followed Kovac's plan, we would have, you know, we wouldn't be in this situation. David Alaba said the same thing after last weekend, saying that I'm behind the coach. And this is after, you know, weeks and weeks of the, you know, some German media, I'm thinking of Bild specifically, talking about how there's these different, you know, divisions amongst the Bayern team and these players, name-dropping Thomas Muller among them, that want Niko Kovac out of the club. It's really a big thing for him to come out and just be like, that's absolutely not true. We're completely behind him. And then for, you know, those, not, or for his actions to say it on the pitch as well, the whole team's actions to say it on the pitch as well, to go out and execute his plan. I thought that was a very encouraging to see.
Yeah, I think the most positive, most optimistic interpretation of what we have been seeing is that they had a very honest discussion, that he really talked to the players, and the players basically told him what they think, honestly, very honestly, and then they found a way together how they can go on and how they can develop this into the right direction. I hope that's what happened. If that's what happened, I'm quite optimistic about the rest of the season, potentially. But maybe it could also just be lip service, just a temporary thing. It's just hard to say for sure right now.
I don't feel like, if it was lip service, which is definitely a possibility, I don't feel like so many players would come out saying the same thing and would be so expressive in their support for the coach. Because I think they could be a little bit more diplomatic, you know, say something like, well, I'm just glad that the team won the game. We just, you know, we wanted to do this after what's been going on and not even bring Kovac up. But for, you know, Arjen Robben, Thomas Muller, Manuel Neuer, three of arguably the biggest leaders in the locker room.
Well, that's the captaincy order, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah. So you got your captain, vice captain, and third captain, I guess, all saying, you know, if we would listen to the coach, things go well, or we did listen to the coach, things went well. We back him. I think that's pretty huge. Okay, so earlier this week, there were reports coming out that Bayern Munich are willing to spend up to 200 million euros next summer to, I guess, improve their squad. Uli Hoeneß stated at the annual general meeting that there are going to be some big changes to the squad next summer, that the board or the club is going to invest heavily. And so one thing I want to go ahead and discuss this week, I know we're several months ahead, but like Bayern, who like to plan several months ahead, I think we can go ahead and go for this. How would you go about improving Bayern Munich for 200 million euros?
Shall I start? All right. I've made a little list here. Want to start? There's one person, of course, who's definitely coming back by the winter, which is by the summer, which is Marco Friedl. So just to make sure that we all know about that, that we have that in mind, because obviously I would think that he can be at least a part in this squad for the 2019-2020 season. So that's why I'm not buying another left back, basically. First thing I would do is I would sign James, because he's obviously needs to be a part of this. Whether we sign him or we don't sign him, that's something we would have to decide as when we spend this money. He should be part of that. I think we definitely need to buy him. We definitely need to sign him. I really don't. I really don't see why we wouldn't. He's still quite cheap for 42 million. That's still quite a steal, I think. Mm-hmm. And I expect a lot of him for the rest of the season. Then I would get Pavard, of course. I wrote him down for 40 million on my list here. So that brings us to 82 million, basically. I went with the numbers from Transfermarkt.de on that one, or Transfermarkt.com, obviously the same numbers. I decided on Timo Werner. I did not go with the Transfermarkt.de number with him, because I think it's not very realistic to get him for 60 million. Excuse me, sorry?
The value for Werner on Transfermarkt is very high. He's good, but I think they're still going on like a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I don't think that 60 million is enough to get Timo Werner.
I would agree there. I think Leipzig will drive it up.
For real?
I went with 70 million for him. I thought maybe that's possible. Maybe that's still too low, I feel, but I think it's possible. Then I would get Nicolas Pepe. I was thinking of 35 million for him. He is a very, very fast player, a very technically great player. And he's just very, very hard to relieve off the ball, basically. Those are the easier ones. And then I also thought, yeah, why not? There were these rumors a couple of weeks ago, and I kept that in the back of my mind, basically, and I liked it more and more, and I thought, why not? So I would also sign Aaron Ramsey for zero.
Okay.
And that leaves me with one more player. One guy who played against us in the recent weeks. I would also sign Nusayir Masraoui from Ajax Amsterdam as a new right back. I think we should be able to sign him for, like, I guess 10 million or something like that. That should, I guess, be possible. Right backs are not that expensive. He's still very young. He's not on everybody's radar at this point. So I guess that could work.
Tim, 200 million, give or take.
Okay, I've got this down to 175 because everybody knows that Bayern Munich likes to be as frugal as possible. So this is them like balling out of control, but still doing it very modestly. I would start with Nico Elvedi from Gladbach. He's a centre-back who can also very competently play as a right-back. He's 22 years old. His transfer market value is currently at 23 million. I think he would be able to provide cover at a number of positions. He's also coming from the Bundesliga, so there's every possibility that Bayern could work their magic there. I think he's a very talented footballer, and I'd really like to see him at Bayern. Getting somebody that is defensively sound who can also play at right back would be excellent by if there are plans for Kimmich to stay in the midfield. Following from that, I would get, again, just going on the transfer market value, I would get Anthony Martial from United for 60 million. However, so he's currently in his last year of his contract, but I think United have the option to extend for a year, which is quite likely. He's been playing very well. This is a transfer that should have happened about 6 months ago, but oh well, we'll just move past that. Again, another player that can cover multiple positions, of which Bayern lack somebody that can do that. Martial for 60 million. probably not ever going to happen. Of course, James for 42. That's a given at this point. For all of the rumours of Benjamin Pavard coming, he's never really impressed me. There's that gif going around on Twitter of that really good pass, which is, yeah, I can't dispute that. A very, very good pass. But I've never watched a game of his where I thought, wow, this guy is very, very good. I look at, is it Matthijs de Ligt? De Ligt?
I think it's
De Ligt. I'm going to call him De Ligt.
Okay.
Yeah, it's probably De Ligt.
Probably his De Ligt, one game, but I'm not sure.
I've got no idea. I'm looking at his first name, and it is not easy for me. But I watched his game against Bayern. That's a game where you think, okay, everybody needs to pay attention to this player right now. Centre-back, he's 19 years old. He's already the captain of Ajax. At 50 million on Transfermarkt, that is a very, very good deal. I don't think you can get somebody that has that sort of... It's difficult to compare him to another player, but I guess if Mbappe was a defender, that's the sort of equivalent, maybe. Somebody that is already that good at that age is only going to go up. I think Matthijs de Ligt for 50 million is great business, and it's business that Bayern really should be doing. That takes me to 175 million. I would gladly take Aaron Ramsey for free. I like Aaron Ramsey. He's injury prone, but he can play in the middle, he can play out wide. I think he's a good player. He's a player that works very hard. But then that's another box-to-box midfielder arriving for free.
So you cannot really sell Lewandowski if you're signings, I suppose, because I would very much like to sell Lewandowski, and I think I could with my list.
In my notes, I had Luka Jovic. And this isn't, I don't want to say this is a reactionary thing, like, oh, he scored some goals. I've been a fan of his for about a year now, like, almost exactly a year, towards the end of, or the beginning of 2018, I started to pay a bit more attention to him. And he's always been fine, but this season in particular, now that he's in the spotlight, as we've brought him up before compared to other players in the Frankfurt team, he is the person that stands out the most. He's 20 years old. I think he's currently valued at about 25 million or something along those lines. 20 million, okay. At 20 years old, he does exactly what Lewandowski does, more so this season. He would be a great, great signing for Bayern to have. The problem is that he's still technically on loan from Benfica. So at the end of this year, then Frankfurt sign him. So if we do this again next year, he's number one on my list.
Tim, I don't know if you remember, I think it was back in maybe April, whenever Kovac was announced. That was also when Ante Rebic was kind of being talked about, and we were talking in the chat about players that Kovac might bring with him, and you brought up Rebic and Jovic. And I remember telling you then, out of the two, I'd rather have Luka Jovic, because I like what I see when he plays, and he's a lot younger. But that's also... That's a perfect place for me to start with my list, because I do have Luka Jovic on my list.
Cool.
I'm not a fan of Sandro Wagner as a backup, and I like what I'm seeing from Joshua Zirkzee coming up, but I think we need a player between Zirkzee and Lewandowski, and I think Jovic is just about the right age for that. He's number one on my list. I have him down for 20 million. I think that's a bit low. I think that's the transfer market value, but I think he'll go for certainly go for more than that. After him, I was going to have Anthony Martial, but I thought Serge Gnabry is really that kind of dynamic touch-to-touch forward that we talk about. I think he's really growing into that. I think Martial is kind of just a carbon copy of him. So I'd rather get a winger that adds a little bit versatility, a little bit something that we don't have. So I went with Florian Thauvin from Marseille. On transfer market, he's down for 50 million. I honestly think Bayern could probably work something out to get him for less than that. Bayern have got a good kind of French contingent in the club. I think he'd, you know, work in really well. He's left-footed, so I like that. He's remained consistent, although he is in the French league, and that's something Leon Bailey hasn't been able to do this season. So he came off, you know, what he could have been on my list, but he's come off. So I think Tovon would be a really good signing for Bayern. He would bring something that we don't really have in the wings, because Coman is just pure speed, great dribbler, but he does lack a little bit of that end product. Serge Gnabry is almost not even a winger. He's kind of just a wide forward, sometimes even a center forward. So Tovon is more of that Franck Ribéry kind of type of player, I would think. Kind of a mix of Ribéry and Robin, but I like him. He's who I'd bring in. Of course, James for $42 million. I mean, unless there's something going on that we don't know about, that's got to be a no-brainer. That's, you know, just a steal. Benjamin Pavard, $35 million is what the rumors are circulating that we can get him for. So I think for $35 million for a diverse player like him, or a versatile player like him, I think that'd be very nice. And he does have an excellent first name, so he can get in the squad. And then I think that we're kind of trending towards Kimmich going back into midfield, whether, you know, whether or not we like it. So I have Lucas Klostermann down from RB Leipzig. He is on transfer market. He's for $15 million. If Bayern want to get someone a little bit more talented, I think the Napoli right back, I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce his name, maybe Hisage, something like that. But I think he...
Elsit. Elsit something.
Yeah. I think he'd be a good one, but Klostermann for $15 million would be pretty good, and I have seen Bayern being linked with him in the past. Yeah. He's German, so he would fit
yeah,
right
at least
in.
One German player.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's important.
And then...
that's what I... Ah, sorry, you're not finished. I thought you...
Oh, no, yeah, I just got... All I have is one more, because this will put me a little bit over $200 million, but I think if Matthias de Ligt can go for $50 million, Bayern have to be the ones to sign him. I do think he's going to go for a lot more to a completely different club than Bayern Munich, but I would love to get him in. So, yeah, that's my list. Jovic, Tovin, James, Pavard, Klostermann, and De Ligt. I want to ask you, Sebastian, you said Nicolas Pepe, correct? You would bring him in?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought about him on my list over Tovin. Does he really impress you that much? Do you think he can make the leap to Bayern Munich?
Yeah, I think he can. He's so technically gifted. I really like that in him. I think even more so than Kingsley Coman. I think that's what impressed me most about him. And he's also a winger. He can play on the wing, but he also likes to go through the middle a lot. He can even play striker. So he brings a lot to the table that Florian Thauvin does not bring so much, I think. The point that he can play striker, that he's really an actual winger who can go one-to-one on the wing but also come through the middle, those are things that I like very much about the guy.
Well, he's also 2 years younger than Thauvin, and...
Yeah, also, yeah.
And he'd almost definitely be cheaper.
Yeah.
Because Tovon's been, you know, putting up great numbers for a few years now, and... Marseille have kind of been a bit stubborn about him, so I could swap them out reasonably or acceptably. I just wanted to hear why you put him up there.
Yeah, his value on Transfermarkt is really just $25 million. I chalked him up for $35 million, so I think it's still relatively cheap. $35 million cannot really go wrong at that number, I think.
Tim, why no Benjamin Pavard?
I think, had I not seen the Bayern-Ajax game, I probably would have said, yeah, let's get him in. And as great as his first name is, it was just so night and day between the two of them. What I saw from Pavard was a good defender in the Bundesliga. France international, starting right back. Kind of even more of a defensive liability than Kimmich is at right back. What I then saw in De Ligt was defensive stability and an understanding of what was asked of him. Coming at such a young age, it was just so clear that the difference between the two... So Pavard is 21, 20, he's young and is almost definitely a bit older than De Ligt. Mm. The fact that it was just so clear that this was a player that is definitely going to be, well, he already is one of the best centre backs in the world. That's why he's been linked with all of these great teams. I think it is just the fact that he is clearly so evidently much better in that sense. That's why I went for De Ligt rather than Pavard. It's going to be one of the two. If we don't get one, then we should get the other. Although it seems fairly certain we definitely got one at this point.
I guess I would, if not for Pavard, I might have gone with no center back even. I think that's not our greatest need, because I think Las Lucas Maia is really a great prospect, and maybe he can do a lot back there. Maybe if we are playing Kimmich on the six, we can still put Javi Martinez back there. I would have put De Ligt on my list too, but it's just 200 million. You cannot buy the world with 200 million. it's a lot. It's an incredible lot of money for Bayern Munich, but it's, you cannot assign everybody. But I really wonder why you, Tim, did not get a dedicated right or left back at least. I like Elvedi as a player, but do you want to start him on the right side?
I probably would. I think the fact that he can comfortably play in the middle and out wide in defence, like, it's good to see players like James and Martial be able to play out wide and in defence. Their job is go forward. The fact that you have that sort of defensive discipline in a player, it would be a matter of, is Kimmich fit? If he's going to be right back, if Kimmich is fit, let's put him a right back. If you want to play him in the middle, you've got somebody that's just as good, if not maybe better, at right back. I wouldn't have him as like a dedicated right back, because I still don't really know what. I think it's fairly safe to say that Benjamin Pavard will be going to Bayern. I don't really know what it is that he's going to be doing. If he is going to be a right back, or if he is going to be a centre back, or if he is going to be both, I'd rather get Nico Elvedi, because he's going to be cheaper and has been able to do it slightly more consistently. Pavard's kind of come from nowhere. Not to say that.
I mean, he won the World Cup as a right back. So
yeah, that's quite an impressive feat. But seeing how that's translated to Stuttgart.
Nico Elvedi is still pretty young. Maybe he will win the World Cup as a right back too in due time.
For Switzerland, with Jadon Sakiri scoring several overhead kicks, no doubt, as only he can. I think I would pick Nico Elvedi. He wouldn't have a dedicated position. He is just that good.
Well, we have to remember that Rafinha is probably leaving at the end of this year. His contract expires at the end of this season, so that leaves us with, if Kimmich's in midfield, no right back. If Kimmich's at right back, then we have no backup. So that's one thing. Ooh. The fact that Pavard can play right back is something that I think really speaks for him. And Klosterman can play right back or left back, and that was one thing that I thought of when putting him on my list. I think that would honestly be a really good transfer for Bayern Munich. He's young. He can play either side. He's kind of like Rafinha, but improved, a little bit better. And then Klosterman can actually, I think he's played center back some for Leipzig, and he's not the smallest or quickest of fullbacks, but that makes it to where he can also play center back. So I think that'd be a good signing. So my thing with De Ligt is I don't see him going for 50 million. And based on the rumors, I can see Pavard going for 35 million. And so I'd kind of rather Bayern focus on getting the cheaper player than spending, 100 million on a 19-year-old defender when we do have guys like Lars Lucas Maia coming up. And, we still have Niklas Süle, Jerome Boateng, Mats Hummels, which Javi Martinez even, who may be falling down in their careers, but are still on their day world-class center backs.
And what I think we haven't mentioned enough right now, I think Bayern is going to get some German player, right? I cannot imagine that they don't, because Hoeneß has always made a huge point of getting the best German players. So they are going to get at least one German player if they are going to spend that big, I think. So you went with Klostermann. I also was thinking about him. I think he's also a very good player. I could really see him at Bayern. He's a bit big for what I would want in a right back. And obviously that comes with a couple of problems. He looks more like a center back, really, and plays a bit more like a center back, which can also be said about Pavard, of course, since he's also naturally a center back. But I really wanted an actual right back. Who really looks like a right back and does things right backs usually would be expected to do. Yeah, but I think we really need a German player, and I think nobody is more high profile in that way than Timo Werner.
Yeah.
And I think we can really, really afford to let Robert Lewandowski walk if we get Timo Werner. So that's what I like about that. That would be a striker that fits the kind of system I imagine for Bayern Munich. The more flexible kind of thing we have been seeing from the national team. That would be great. Imagine how great that would be with Timo Werner up there, Serge Gnabry, sometimes Thomas Müller, sometimes Nicolas Pepe, Kingsley Coman. I mean, that's going to be great. That's going to be so much fun.
A lot of speed.
Yeah, quick.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, Timo Werner, I like him as a player. I like him a whole lot as a player, actually, and I would be more than happy to see him come to Bayern, but he has to be more consistent. I think he's leading the Bundesliga in a big chances missed this season. But he's also he's also right up there with the top scorers in the Bundesliga this season. So it's a double-sided coin, because it speaks to how good his positioning is and how, you know, he's getting himself in the right places. But if he wants to be a striker, if he wants to take over from Robert Lewandowski, we need more end product. And then also kind of going off that, Serge Gnabry is kind of a player very similar to Timo Werner. They can both play anywhere across the front line. They're both very quick, decent enough finishers. They've got a nose for goal. Neither of them are really pure wingers, I would say, but I think Timo Werner would be a great signing. My only real problem, you know, other than he needs to work on his finishing, but that'll come with time, my only real problem would be the price tag that RB Leipzig would likely charge, especially when... Mm-hmm. Other clubs are almost definitely going to be coming in after him. I think, you know, several Premier League clubs will likely be coming to try and sign him, at least. So,
yeah, very true, very true. I think that, by the way, I think that's an advantage that he's quite similar to Serge Gnabry, because that's the kind of thing I want to play.
Very
three
true.
Guys up there. That's what I would like to play, and I think that would leave us with so many different possibilities there. You could mix it up a lot of the time. That would be.
I mean, can you imagine Coman, Gnabry, and Timo Werner as a front three?
Yeah, exactly.
The speed.
And then you can still bring in Thomas Müller and probably Nicolas Pepe if you also buy Nicolas Pepe. That would be so great. That's exactly the kind of football I would be looking for.
And another thing that we didn't really account for, because it's all speculation anyway, is the fact that players will be sold over the summer. Because that's been talked about almost as heavily as the fact that players will be coming in. So many people, or so many guys at the club, have their futures in like complete uncertainty. And I don't know if, you know, when Hoeneß talks about spending big, when Bild says we have that 200 million war chest, if they're accounting for, you know, the money that we're going to get for selling players, or if that's just separate from that.
Probably.
So
he's got plans to sell Wagner for 150 million.
Actually, I would be prepared to sell both of our strikers with the players I'm going to get. I was actually thinking about that. I would have probably kept Arjen Robben, but that's a done deal now. But yeah, I would have been fine with Ribery, Lewandowski, Wagner, and Rafinha going at least. I would be perfectly fine with that. Maybe a center back. I would be okay with one center back leaving, because I'm getting Pavard. I think Lars Lucas Meyer is a great player. I'm also getting a new right back. So, yeah, That's what I was thinking when I made my list here.
In terms of like outgoing players, obviously people will be leaving because of how their contract is. It's very difficult to say, to look at this team and say they are expendable. Players like Sandro Wagner, okay, he is objectively a backup. He's the only player that you can actually sell for money. Rafinha is objectively a backup. He'll be leaving, his contract's ending. The only player that I'm looking at that I think Bayern could sell is probably Javi Martinez. And even then, I'm still thinking, why? Like, why would you sell? Like, is there anybody on this team that's a better tackler than Javi Martinez?
Well,
potentially no. Boateng.
Yeah, Boateng, maybe. Yeah,
as a pure tackler, I'm going to include decision making in that, and I think he's got that over Boateng. Mm. As in, like, when to go in for a tackle and when not to. So I would say he's the best tackler. But to answer,
it's a huge difference the way they are usually doing that tackling.
Yeah, exactly.
Boateng has these great tacklings out of a full run, and that's not what Martinez is doing most of the time.
I think Martinez's role in the team, I've talked about this before, I think it's kind of dwindling. I don't think that what he brings to the table is something that Kovac really is looking for, or something that Bayern are really, I guess, wanting to use going into the future. So it's not necessarily that he's expendable as a player, but just in this current system, he's kind of expendable.
Which is weird, considering how physical he is.
Yeah.
You'd think it's the sort of player that Kovac would definitely want.
But I would definitely say Sandro Wagner is expendable, especially because of Serge Gnabry and his ability to play as a striker. I mean, I know it's taboo to say I'd play Thomas Müller as a striker before I'd play Sandro Wagner as a striker at this point.
This season in particular, he's been very off. There were times last season where I was thinking, oh, I'm so glad that he's here. But now I'm like, oh, Sandro Wagner's here.
He's almost like a mascot at this point. It's just the only thing he has
It's a nice story.
Yeah, he's just so happy to be at Bayern, and that's really the end of it. It's just, look at him, how excited he is to never do anything productive. Yeah, exactly. So
he has had it in interviews, I think, also.
I wouldn't be surprised
for actual quotes, but yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he goes in January even. Kovac doesn't seem to have any sort of plan for him. But I guess we'll see how happy he really is.
Which is interesting. It's interesting, I think, because Kovac really has played with the standard kind of striker and with the high balls, with the wings, and that you would think that Sandro Wagner fits quite well into that plan, but hasn't really worked out for him, I guess, under Kovac.
Like another player that is going to get stuck in and be physical, because Lewandowski, he has moments where he's physical and gets involved with tackles. Sandro Wagner does that. So it is really quite strange. So this kind of goes back to like this other theory that I've had of like, is Kovac the person that's actually managing it? But again, that's for another day. That's like a whole other situation.
So, by the way, just to make that clear, none of you is selling Lewandowski, are you?
Depends on the offer, I guess.
Yeah, if the right offer comes in.
But I don't think that at this point there'll be I'm talking 100 million. I would sell him for sure. Maybe less than that. It just depends. It also kind of depends on how the rest of the season plays out. But I don't want to sell him and then, we get another striker who blows hot and cold and just doesn't blow hot as often.
I think if I can can sell him for the amount of money that it takes to sign Timo Werner, I'm fine with it. And I think that would maybe just roughly work out. I think that could happen. Somewhere 70, 80 million-ish.
For a player that's not that unrealistic. 31 as well.
Yeah, that's true. But I think one or two years ago, you could have sold him for 100 million, I'm pretty sure. So you should be able to sell him for like 75 or something like that in the summer. That should be possible, I suppose.
He's like, I've never been a big fan of his, but this season he's been doing kind of what I've wanted him to do for a really long time: get stuck in, show some commitment to the club. Whether that's just because the transfer window isn't open yet, who knows? But now he's actually getting involved and showing some passion. It's welcome to see, but again, if the right offer does come in, like 70, 80, 90 million, if it was 70 million, then I could probably say goodbye, as long as that money is then reappropriated.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you need to buy another striker if you sell him there. That's pretty clear. You're not going to play with Sandro Wagner.
Oh, no, I just probably also Sandro Wagner in my eyes.
Exactly. So, yeah, I never really understand why we even bought, why we even got Sandro Wagner in the first place.
Yep.
As I've said that before, I would have taken Oud over him every day of the week, basically.
So unfortunately, Garrett wasn't able to join us today to record, but I do have him on right now. I'm going to ask him a couple of those questions that we just got done discussing and try and get those takes. Garrett, how you doing?
Doing okay. Tired, but doing okay.
All right. I want to start off with one question that we actually got from Twitter, and I really like you to answer because you were actually on the podcast last week. And the question is, have our thoughts on Niko Kovac changed since last week?
Yes. I mean, I think the thing is, you know, up until last week, we had been kind of preaching patience, patience, patience. And then, you come into a match where you should just completely destroy, a team, and then to come out and look like you have the match and then let it go. I think that opened up some of the, or took some of the doubts that we had and amplified them even more. Mm-hmm. And so I think that my thoughts on Kovac have changed, in that they have improved. I do think that I feel more comfortable with Bayern going forward with him right now. But I don't know that I feel good about it. If that may sound a little contradictory, but you know, it's like here's this coach that we were trying to be patient with, and then you lose a 3-1 lead against, you know, maybe the worst team in the Bundesliga, and then you come out in a game that really doesn't mean a whole lot against Benfica, and actually look pretty good, and actually do it for 90 minutes, and that's actually what I said in the podcast too, was that if they come out and they put on a good performance and they do it for 90 minutes, then I'm going to feel better about Kovac. And I stand by that. And I think that, you know, this week, just like last week, we're probably going to overreact a little bit. But that's kind of what being a fan is. And like I said, I feel better. I don't know that I feel good.
Okay.
I guess that's what I...
Fair enough. At the end of the podcast, at some point in the podcast, we talked about kind of a list of things that Kovac should do, could do in order to kind of win us back over. And he really hit a lot of those. And one of those was kind of nailing down a system that he's used for the past two matches. What do you think about the move of Joshua Kimmich back into midfield and that pairing that he has with Leon Goretzka in there?
It looked really good, and I know I've been trying to push Goretzka as a defensive midfielder, maybe since the beginning of the season, and I feel like that pairing could be really, really nice. And I guess the way that it worked against Bremen was enough to make me kind of step back and say, okay, I don't want Rafinha playing right back every week. And I don't think even Tim wants that, but I think that, you know, if I've got to pick a spot where I think we can be a little bit weaker, then sure, right back I think we can handle that more than maybe down the spine of the team. And also, the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, if they go out and they buy a right back in the winter transfer window, then it's kind of a moot point. You know, Rafinha all of a sudden doesn't have to be the starting right back every single week. Now all of a sudden we have somebody else we can stick there, and maybe that's better. So I like it. I think that it's all predicated though on will we buy somebody in the winter.
Gotcha. So were you able to watch both of the games?
I watched I think 3 minutes of the Benfica game, and then because I was at work and I couldn't really get a good feed on my phone, and then I watched the whole Bremen match except for little spurts here and there.
Okay, because Tim and Sebastian both agreed more or less that they thought the Werder Bremen win was actually the more impressive of the two victories, and so mostly because Bayern were able to hold out a lead away from home, I guess, at a different Bundesliga side. I wasn't able to really completely watch either of the matches, so I was just going to get your take on that. You think holding on to those three important points in the Bundesliga is a bit bigger, a bit more important than, getting the dominant win in the Champions League?
Yeah, I mean, I think that definitely the way that we kind of went into the Champions League match saying that it wasn't really all that important. I mean, we wanted to see, and I think I even might have said, I don't care what happens in that match. And I know that you and Sebastian were kind of not hoping for a loss, but you'd be okay with it, And I think that, yeah, definitely the Bundesliga is more important right now. The Champions League was more or less sewn up, and, there was going to be a few more chances to sew it up if we didn't get it this past Tuesday. The Bremen win, even though the scoreline didn't really reflect it, they did seem like they were playing more together. It did seem like they had more of a agreed idea of how they're going to go forward and all that. But it just, you had that one mistake that ended up costing the clean sheet, and which has been Bayern all year, and it kind of skewed the game a little bit. I know it took me a little while to get to where I was thinking, okay, no, that was actually a pretty good win for Bayern, because you look at it and you're like 2-1 against Bremen, who's not really been playing all that well. I think that that was definitely the more important one, and probably the more impressive. I'm not sure what's up with Louis on why he's missing so many chances lately. Mm-hmm. That's kind of odd. But he'll work himself out of that as Bayern work out of their slump. So I think Bremen was definitely a better win.
Yeah, something you just hit on that I brought up earlier was Bayern's. So I'm looking at the expected goals. Bayern's expected goal for that game was 3.37, and Bremen's was 0.66. Wow. So
yeah,
it was another one of those matches where the end score didn't really reflect how it went. Like Bayern should have won by more.
And that's been every week. It just seems like it's like the chances that Bayern are getting, they're either flubbing themselves or it's a great save or it's somehow someone gets a foot in there, and it just. I mean, it's not, I don't really like the concept of luck, but there is that, you don't know how else to explain it.
Yeah.
And then Bayern on the same point, it's like, you can't make one little mistake without it ending up in the back of the net. And that's just
every
bizarre.
Half chance has turned into a goal for the other team. And it's taken us two chances to get a goal. So.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And you're a little bit more critical of Bayern anyway. I mean, like, that's the other thing is that, like, Werder Bremen, let in a couple goals, you're like, well, it's Bremen. What do you mean? But Bayern let in a goal, and it's one goal. And we're like, oh gosh, their defense is terrible. It all, perspective helps.
Definitely. Okay. So our other big question for the week, earlier this week, Uli Hoeneß talked about Bayern's plans to really invest over the summer. And several media outlets are saying Bayern are willing to spend up to 200 million euros to improve the squad over the summer. So our question was, how do you improve Bayern Munich next summer for 200 million euros? Who are you bringing in?
Okay, so I feel like I went way off the board with this, but I think that's good for the sake of the podcast. I agree with most of those. I didn't have James on my list because it would make sense that that would be part of the 200 million, but I guess I considered, since you're re-signing a player or whatever.
Fair enough.
But so I didn't consider that. But I do have Kai Havertz. I think that signing him would be huge for Bayern if they could do. I mean, if they could pull it off, I think I have it down as 55 mil, which is hefty. But he's 19 years old, attacking midfielder. Mm-hmm. That could even, you know, allow you to kind of move on from James if you so choose. And like I said, I think, you know, his playing with Kimmich and Kimmich vouching for him from the national team helps his case too. I do have them signing Benjamin Pavard because I do think that even if he isn't the kind of center back that we want, he can play both of those fullback positions. And I think that maybe at 35 million, maybe that's a little much for a guy that you are expecting to play, I don't know, at worst, be in the Rafinha role. You know, I feel like that might be a little much, but he's 22. He could develop, especially given the means that Bayern have of, you know, developing players, and he can play with some better players, which will help him. Now is when we get a little bit crazy.
Okay.
So my first one, and a guy that I really like from the World Cup, and just watching him play when he does get to play, is Alex Iwobi from Arsenal, and the winger, 21 years old and 18 million. So I think that'd be a good bit of business for Bayern to get a real winger to go on the other side of Koeman and have Lewandowski in the middle, or up top. I think that would give Bayern a ton of speed. I think it would give them kind of that Arjen Robben, Frank Ribery dynamic. And I think he's a lot better than what he's shown maybe at Arsenal, for various reasons. I mean, they got a lot of forwards and stuff. Another player that I have, before I get to kind of some really, maybe not really out there, but we'll see. Wilfred Ndidi, from Leicester City, I think is a great defensive midfielder. And I know we have a few guys that we feel like can play that position, but especially if we're going to move Kimmich right back, that would be perfect to stick a guy in there that's done it and done it well at a really high level. And it doubles up our Nigerians. So
yeah, exactly.
If we sign Iwobi, so that's awesome. And then the other two and are more like perspective, but I think that Bayern need a few more of those, like they have with Alfred Davies, or is it? It's Alfred Davies, right?
Alfonso.
No, it's not Alfonso. I'm sorry, Alfonso. My other two, Issa Diop from he's playing for West Ham right now. He's a center back. And they signed him this off season, but Barcelona was actually looking to sign him too, and as kind of a prospect. But he's done really well and really come along with West Ham, and he's another guy that can play center back or either of the fullback positions, and do so pretty well. He's got a lot of speed and pretty good passing ability too. And then the last one, because I had a little bit of money left over, and I want this to happen. Tim Weah, signed him from PSG, and he's at 5 mil right now. But we gotta get an American, so we can compete with the Pulisics and Weston McKennies and now Tyler Adams at RB Leipzig. he's just a player that I enjoy watching when he plays for the U.S. men's national team. But that, so that's when it's just kind of a fun one. But I really do think that Iwobi could be a nice addition. And Bayern wouldn't have to necessarily break the bank to do that. So that was one that I kind of felt, I don't necessarily feel super strongly about, but I like that idea.
I thought he was, you said he was 21, right?
Yep.
I see. I was thinking he was like 23, 24 maybe. So that just shows how long he's kind of been on the scene, that he's still such a young guy, kind of like Raheem Sterling was for so many years, just that he's always been that young guy. And
well, and what's weird is, like, I, whenever I've seen him play, I look at him and I think, like, why isn't he just an automatic pencil him in starter? I know he's, when you're a young player, you're gonna make some of those young player mistakes and stuff, but I really enjoy watching him. And like you said, it feels like he's been around for a long time. So to get him and he's still 21, I think that'd be a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Wilfred Ndidi is one I like a lot that I didn't even think about just because of our depth in midfield. But should Javi Martinez move on, or even if he stays, I think if we're going to go for a defensive midfielder, Ndidi would be, you know, a really good pure defensive midfielder. And then also Kai Havertz is a player that nearly made my list. If it wasn't for the budget, then he would definitely be on there. But the problem with him is the whole, you know,
Leverkusen thing. Yeah. And I thought about that too, but I thought, you know, in this world where I have 200 million euros to spend, I can mend fences. But I think, like, the big thing that comes through on my list anyway is that Benjamin Pavard is the oldest player that we would be signing at 22 years old.
Right.
And I do think, and I think that, like, that opens you up to, you know, maybe it doesn't work out right away. It might be harder for that team to gel a little bit, but I think for Bayern to do what I think they need to do, and get more young and more dynamic, they need to look at some of those really young players that haven't quite reached the point where we can't afford them. And Bayern can probably afford almost anybody, but what they're actually going to do is a little bit different. But I just think, like you said, if Javi Martinez, you move on from him, maybe you move on from either Hummels or Boateng, and I agree, not both of them. I would like to keep one of them at least. And you're going to be gone, or Robin's going to be gone, Ribery's going to be gone. Just get younger, get more dynamic, get faster. Because that's the way that the games go in, whether people like it or not. And so get younger, get faster.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of youth, a lot of potential in your squad for sure. We talked a little bit about, you know, the whole idea of some people leaving. One question I think Sebastian brought up is, would you be okay with Robert Lewandowski leaving over the summer?
Me?
Specifically? He asked all of us. He asked all
of us. Okay. I just know that I'm the Lewandowski apologist, maybe self-proclaimed. It depends on who we get. I don't know that Bayern showed that they can score frequently enough without him to really feel good about that. I mean, and he's only 30 years old. Mm-hmm. You're probably looking at least 2 years left of him being a really effective striker, and then even after that, he's probably good enough to where he can last a little bit longer than most strikers. So, I mean, I'd be okay with it depending on who we got. And I don't know how many strikers even remotely in his class would be available for a reasonable amount of money. Cause even, like, I don't know, Timo Werner, I struggle sometimes with how much of him is the system he plays in and how much of it is just his pure skill. I mean, he's definitely a good player, but I don't know. I struggle to see how he would translate necessarily. And yeah, I don't know how many other strikers would be out there.
Yeah,
I guess
I pretty much said, you know, for the right price.
Yeah.
And I also brought up Timo Werner because I think that as far as you know, Bayern is concerned, that's probably the next step after Lewandowski. He only really works, or he's probably only really works in a specific system, like you said. And he leaves, like I brought up, he leaves a little bit to be desired sometimes with his finishing, especially, I would say. He tends to miss a lot of chances, but he is also very versatile, and he fits that. You talked about, you know, football is kind of transitioning to that fast, to a faster game, yeah. And he fits that very well. But
yeah, I mean, I could see too, because I think it has been brought up maybe, but if you decide to go away from just a strict one striker up top and then, you know, two wings and a midfielder or three midfielders behind them or whatever, and you go more towards that 4-3-3 type look, where your top three can kind of all interchange, and it's kind of, you kind of get away from this traditional lump it into the striker idea. Maybe I could see, you know, Gnabry being effective enough.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much I believe that. I know he can do it, but relying on that week in, week out would worry me. I would say probably, if I had to give a definite yes or no, I would say no, not this summer, but maybe the next.
Fair enough.
I would be okay.
Fair enough. All right, well, thanks for sitting down to talk with me. Hopefully next week we'll have you on for the whole thing.
That would be awesome.
All right, so looking at some news from this past week, we'll go ahead and just dive right into the biggest piece of news from the past week, and that is Arjen Robben, in his fan club visit, part of, you know, Bayern's annual tradition, announced that this will be his last season with Bayern Munich. It just hurts to say that, almost, to actually say that out loud and know that it's true. Tim, how are you feeling?
I've been prepared for it for a long time, but it's still so sad. I was out with my girlfriend the other day, and I was checking my phone because I'm a terrible boyfriend like that. And we were at lunch, and I was like, "Oh no!" She's like, "Why? What's wrong? What's wrong?" I was like, "Arjen Robben's leaving the club." Obviously, she didn't care, but it is really sad. Like, he's not been at his best, but then he did play at his best, and then decided to leave.
Hmm.
It's been a long time coming, but it doesn't make it any worse. Him and Ribéry, I can see Ribéry maybe leaving as well, but both of them going, it's going to be difficult.
I have to say, I think his timing was a bit of a stroke of genius because of after that Benfica mm-hmm. game, how well he played coming back from injury, and then mm-hmm. you know, immediately announces, "Oh yeah, by the way, this is my last season at Bayern Munich." That's genius by him, because if he comes out, you know, doesn't score a goal, it plays terribly, and then the next day is like, "Oh, I'm retiring." All the fans are like, "Oh, good, perfect." But he destroys Benfica, scores the best goal of the week in the Champions League, and then says, "I'm retiring." And now all the fans are like, "Oh no!" After 10 years, you know, it is disappointing. And like you said, we've kind of been waiting on it, almost even hoping for it in a way. And then, you know, when it gets here, it's still like kind of depressing. He's actually leaving.
It might just be really the right time. It's been 10 good years, and you don't know how long you will still be able to play on that level. I know, but I think he really wants to leave on that high level. Mm-hmm. I don't think he really wants to become the guy you just play every two or three games, maybe for 20 minutes or something like that. I don't think he wants to be that guy. I think he wants to quit really while he's on top, and I think, yeah, he's doing that, and I think that's fine. And we've been talking about where he might go or if he might end his career. He said that himself. He might call it quits, or he might go somewhere else. He said that, and I really was thinking the USA would probably be a good place. I think the Americans among us didn't. Garrett was quite skeptical about that, but I think that might be an interesting place for him. I would much prefer that to China or Saudi Arabia or something actually.
Well, my thing, MLS, the Chinese league, the Saudi league, I think I'm kind of lumping these all in one thing when I say I think he's far too competitive and hardworking to come to either or to come to any of those leagues. I don't really keep up with MLS that much, mostly because it bores me a little bit watching them play. it's just not really that good. And that's what I think Robin, if he's watched any MLS games, he's got to be thinking, you know, he could come and dominate and he would shred the defenders over here. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's what he wants. I think he wants to go to a team where he has to fight for his place in the starting 11. And I think his biggest thing is probably going to be a team that has a chance to play in the Champions League or even maybe the Europa League. Because I think he still wants to play on those European nights. I think he really, that's kind of where he thrives.
Yeah, but what kind of club do you have in mind? What could that be? Maybe Premier League?
Well, I mean, this is the easiest
Netherlands,
one.
But
yeah, exactly. I think the easiest one to point out is PSV, reunite with Mark Van Bommel.
He's
played there before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. They do have
that's exciting.
And they do have a chance to, you know, make the Champions League. So I think if that's, I mean, that's got to be his number one destination, I would think.
Yeah, but the day-to-day games in the league in the Netherlands, I think that would not be as demanding as he might like. Not much different from the MLS, I think.
I think it's a little bit more different. I think it's a little more competitive than you would give it credit for.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
Or
it's just not what it used to be. The Dutch league used to be quite strong in the 90s when I started to properly become a fan, but it's just not what it used to be. I feel like not so sure. Yeah, could be. He could at least play Champions League. That's definitely a plus. That's definitely something I would imagine he would enjoy still. But not so sure. As I said, I guess I could imagine him going to England, to the Premier League. I could imagine that, but I don't see him going anywhere in the Bundesliga. I don't really see him going to Spain because it's just either you go to the big clubs or something very uninteresting. Maybe Italy. Maybe there could be a place for him in Italy. I could imagine that. But that's basically all the options I can think. Oh, Vissel Kobe. Maybe Vissel Kobe. I think they're investing a lot in Japan, but that would be roughly the same deal as Major League Soccer, I guess.
Yeah, I think that the same thing with Vissel Kobe in Japan is what you're looking at with MLS. I don't think that's competitive enough. And I think MLS may be higher than the Japanese league, but it may honestly be that low of a competition. It's not somewhere that you see someone who's still playing at the levels of Arjen Robben come. I mean, I know we have Zlatan over here and Schweinsteiger's over here, but he's fallen off significantly. And you see how he's still, I mean, he's still one of the better players in the whole entire league. So I don't think it's something that Arjen Robben would really want. I could be very wrong. He could want to take kind of a step back and come to a place where he can, I mean, he'll dominate, that's for sure. So maybe that's what he wants.
He's always kind of struck me as a player that doesn't do things for the money or the glory. Everybody wants to win trophies and everybody wants to earn a living. That's obvious. But you've never seen anything about him like holding out for more money or talks about a new contract have reached a standstill because of like they can't agree on wages or personal terms. He's always seemed like the sort of player that just wants to play the best quality football imaginable. And he's obviously come to the realization, I can't do this at Bayern anymore. Let's go somewhere else. So I don't think that he would go to the MLS or to China or Saudi Arabia or to Japan. Italy, maybe, because they have a tendency to prolong, like, players that are over 33 and they're just like, suddenly you can play until you're 40. But he's done England. Like, he won the league at Chelsea. He's done Spain. He won the league at... Did he win the league at Real Madrid? He certainly would have come very close. Yeah, I honestly can't think of where he would go for the challenge. The only place where I could see him going would be to PSV. And honestly, the idea of him and Mark Van Bommel leading PSV to European glory, wow, that is not something that I realised that I am desperate to see until just now. I would love to see that.
Yeah,
and yeah, I want that to happen. I'm so excited for that to happen.
I think the first thing we can rule out is another Bundesliga squad or another Bundesliga club, because I don't think he'll go somewhere else in Germany, just because of his loyalty to Bayern. He won't want to play them at least, you know, multiple times a season unless it's Champions League. So I guess we'll really just have to wait and see if he gives more comment. I don't think he'll retire. He said that he doesn't think he will. I can't see that happening, but there is always the opportunity. I want to talk about Franck Ribéry, because in his fan club visit, instead of taking the opportunity to announce his retirement, he said that it just kind of... I think he basically hinted that if Bayern want to give him a contract, he's accepting it. Because unlike Robin, he may think that he can still play an integral part to Bayern Munich. I don't know. But it would have been very nice to see them pretty much announce it at the exact same time, especially because Ribéry had... actually had a good game against Benfica as well, which is a lot more of a rarity than it is, even is for Robin. But do you think his retirement announcement, or not retirement, I guess, but his announcement that he'll be leaving Bayern is going to be following suit pretty closely, or are we going to have to wait a little bit for that?
Tough question. I feel like he might wait. Just not to be the guy who retired 5 days after Arjen Robben, basically retired from Bayern 5 days after Arjen Robben, not to be in his shadow, I guess. Maybe he really thinks he's going to stay and become even more of a club legend, but I don't think that that's going to work out. But on the other hand, Kovac is playing him all the time. Why would he leave? So I would love for him to... I would love for him to find a way to leave on a high note with something, not as the guy who finally is not good enough to play at this club. That would really be sad. And as I said, for Arjen Robben, this feels like exactly the right moment. It feels more like 1 year too late for Franck Ribéry, I feel.
Ribéry is someone I can see in MLS. He's kind of got a lifestyle and just a personal style that I think would be very well suited to America. So I can see him coming over, definitely, especially if it means he gets to play, or if he gets a contract with one of the better clubs like LA Galaxy or New York City FC, one of the clubs where there's other former top European players.
Well, the number 7 shirt at New York City's just become vacant, so it's possible. I've never realized just how American his lifestyle is until you pointed it out to me.
Well, he's Muslim. But otherwise, I guess, not the most American things there are in the world.
I remember seeing a picture of him with that rapper,
6ix9ine.
I was like, what are you doing?
What?
Yeah, I mean, he's always wearing his outfits are very...
He's a 35-year-old man.
I'm not even sure how to put it delicately, really. But, he's a 35-year-old man, and his choice of clothing and the celebrities that he decides to take photographs with would definitely suggest otherwise. But
I think he would really enjoy the MLS.
Yeah. I think he would really enjoy the MLS. We can probably just leave it at that. Any other news from this week that you want to discuss? Maybe, Sebastian, you know a little bit more of anything that's coming from the German media. Of course, we had the general meeting.
Especially the criticism against, especially Uli Hoeneß, I think. The whole debate of when is Hoeneß going to leave, when is Karl-Heinz Rummenigge going to leave, and especially the info that Oliver Kahn is very much an important topic here, that they are really thinking about him, that he's probably their number one candidate, maybe, but that he's not coming before Karl-Heinz Rummenigge leaves, which I think gives us a hint as to what kind of role he might play. And I'm not sure what to think about that. I mean, that means that it's going to be a large role, very much a business role, not so much a player related, not so much an actual day-to-day football related role, maybe. At least that's how I interpret this.
Yeah, no, it really confused me as well, because the stuff they were saying, I guess a couple weeks ago, really seemed like Oliver Kahn was coming in soon, and he was going to start low and kind of work his way up. And mm-hmm. now they've kind of backtracked. And the most confusing was the rather firm statement that he won't be joining until Karl-Heinz Rummenigge leaves. I thought that mm-hmm. was a bit, I don't know, questionable. You'd want him to kind of come in and learn under someone like Rummenigge mm-hmm. before immediately coming in and taking over. So I wasn't entirely sure what to make out of all that. I thought maybe, or kind of hoped maybe, that some of that got lost in translation or really wasn't the exact
No, news, not but... really. And I really thought he would more have the role of Uli Hoeneß, probably. The old Uli Hoeneß role, maybe. And not so much the role of Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. They also made it sound like Hoeneß is probably going to stay longer than Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, which also surprised me. I was really thinking that Hoeneß would be good for one or two more years and then he would be gone, but Rummenigge would probably still be there for some 5 years or something like that. That's basically what I imagined. But now it sounds completely different. Now it sounds like Rummenigge is going for two more years and then he's going to leave, and if he wants, Kahn is coming in to kind of replace Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. Or is that, are we reading that wrong? Maybe it's more like there are differences between Oliver Kahn and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge we don't know of, and they just don't want to work together, and somebody else will take Karl-Heinz Rummenigge's role, and then Oliver Kahn is going to come in playing the role of Uli Hoeneß showing him the ins and outs of his club, and then slowly, yeah, I don't know. It's really tough to really make sense of all that.
It's never going to be as simple as, okay, you go, now you come in here, do the job of a president. Like, it's never going to be as simple as that, sadly, which is probably why I didn't get the job that I was interviewing for last week. It's nice of you guys to wish me luck with that. I was really, really interested in the idea of, you know, that old coach and manager, like that separation of powers. So the idea of having Oliver Kahn come in, but to have it completely debunked, he's not going to be coming in as a sporting director. I was genuinely annoyed about that, because having somebody that is that sort of authority, regardless of what player you are, what standing you have in the club, if Oliver Kahn talks to you, you listen to him, because he is the legend, and he's not just a club legend, he's a football legend. He was the best goalkeeper in the world at one point. So even Manuel Neuer, okay, when he first came to Bayern, a lot of the ultra fans were very much against him because he had mocked Oliver Kahn. But he's now in a position where he's the captain and he can look up to him. Because obviously Neuer would have looked up to Kahn when he was younger. Having that sort of... what's the word I'm looking for? Having that sort of presence in the locker room would be just so much, just infinitely more powerful than Salihamidzic sitting in the corner smiling. So now that he isn't going to be, well, I say now, he was never going to be that. The fact that he isn't going to be that role, I don't know what to think. If there was any role that he would be perfect for, it would be that role. So I don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen.
I guess it kind of makes sense because I know that he has an MBA. He studied general management. Maybe it's really the Rummenigge kind of role. But as you said, Tim, I was really imagining some different kind of role for him. Really, the old general manager kind of role, a sporting director, whatever. Because I think that would really be great for the club. But then, who's going to take the role of Uli Hoeneß then? Then this is still a totally open question if it's not Oliver Kahn.
Yeah. Obviously, Rummenigge and Hoeneß haven't been listening to the podcast because we had this completely sorted.
Yeah.
We had it completely sorted for them, and they just won't listen. But
that's the biggest problem here.
Before we get going, let's look ahead to Bayern's game against Nürnberg this weekend. Nürnberg, who actually just finished drawing 1-1 with Bayer Leverkusen. I guess a couple big questions heading into this match is, you know, number one, can Bayern finally keep a clean sheet? We'll be asking that, you know, until they actually do. And you know, two, will we see Kingsley Coman get a start? Will we see Thiago get a start? And I want to address that one first. Who's your starting 11 against Nuremberg? Because it's kind of a bottom of the table team. We have Ajax coming up right after them in the Champions League. That's a pretty important match. So who are you starting? Who is your starting 11 for the weekend?
Ah, really tough. I guess the first question is, are you playing Rafinha on the right side? Probably you are. I think it's not a good idea to change that again. I think Kimmich and Goretzka are working quite well. I would probably not change that. I would probably play with the same defense we saw in the last game. Alaba has playing better. There's no alternative to Rafinha. I think Boateng and Süle are quite fine. Then you have Goretzka. And you have Kimmich, which is quite good. I think I would not change that. I would want to see Kingsley Coman. I don't want to see Franck Ribéry again. He was kind of fine, maybe even good against Benfica, but not so good. I think really most of that was really Arjen Robben getting all of the attention and Ribéry profiting from that. So, I guess that makes it Gnabry, Müller, Coman, and Lewandowski.
I would agree for the most part. I think the defense is fine. I think Kimmich in midfield, Kovac should stick with it. It's working. But I think maybe pair Thiago with him instead of Goretzka. I think if you're going to try that, I don't know if he wants to. He may want to stick with the same midfield. But if he wants to try something like that, Nürnberg would be, you know, a pretty good side to try that against. Muller, Lewandowski playing their striker, shadow striker roles. And then I would say I would like to see Coman on the left. I'd give Arjen Robben a chance on the right almost just because of the news that came out this week. He's going to want, or the fans are going to want to see him play. I want to see him play you know, after that. And Serge Gnabry has been playing a lot recently. Bringing him off the bench, I would be okay with that, splitting the time with Coman.
Okay.
So that's where I'd go. And then, Rafinha right back, Kimmich midfield. I think that should be fine. But I'd probably lean more towards keeping Goretzka in over Thiago because it's more important, I think, right now to keep building momentum and sticking with the team that you know can win rather than trying new things right now.
Yeah, and what do you gain by making Thiago starting when he's just fit again? He's just able to play again. If there's not really no reason to overburden him here, why putting the starting 11? I guess.
My starting 11: Neuer in goal, obviously.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't mention that. Obviously.
It's time for Christian Fruchtel to get the minutes that he deserves.
Oh, man.
I would have Alaba, Boateng. No, I would have Alaba, Hummels, Süle. Hummels hasn't been playing recently. This would be an opportunity for him to maybe get back. Would I have Rafinha at right back, though? That's the question. Yes, I would. I'd have that This is very difficult because there is the risk of you're playing all of your fullbacks at the same time. I think if that wasn't an issue, then yeah, Rafinha at fullback, Rafinha at right back, Kimmich in midfield. I'd maybe have Martinez next to him. If he's fit, then that's great, because as we've seen, Kimmich is very competent going forward. He's good with passing, but does lack that sort of physicality.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this would be a nice partnership to see. Then again, Goretzka did really well this weekend. But yeah, I'd maybe like to see what a midfield partnership of Martinez and Kimmich can do. On the right, I think a home game against Nuremberg, I'd like to see Iron Robin start. Am I right in believing that there's a rival? Is there a rivalry between Bayern and Nuremberg?
Yeah, kind of, I guess.
Nah. That's good enough for me. Iron Robin starting right wing.
I mean, there's a rivalry between Bavaria and Francia. Is it Francia? Is it Franconia? What is the English term for Franken? I'm not sure.
Probably.
Got no idea.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably region. Franconia, but.
Yeah, I think the problem is that it's the name of that part of Bavaria is the same as what we call the old nation of Karl the Große Charlemagne, with France and Germany combined. That was called Francia. In German, it's both Franken, which is very confusing. So I guess Franconia, yeah. So there's a rivalry between those two regions, basically. But okay. Between the clubs, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I hadn't thought that far into it. I just, like, the guy that I've spoken to doesn't like Nuremberg. I thought, that's fine. Yeah, Robin on the right. Gnabry on the left. When he was moved there in the last game, I thought he did really, really a very good job. I'd like for this to be the game where he gets 90 minutes, because he still hasn't had it yet. So this would be a good opportunity. In the middle, Müller, up top, Lewandowski. I think it's still too soon to bring in Thiago and Coman right from the beginning.
Mm.
Fair enough.
And then, as time, take out Martinez and for Thiago.
Maybe I'm just too impatient with Coman. I would so much love to see him play and just not to see Ribéry on the pitch, and maybe not even Robin. I like what he's doing, but I would just like to see what can they do? Just the young guys with Gnabry on the one side, Coman on the other side. I'm just very curious how that's going to end up, what they are going to be able to do, I guess. But yeah, I think I can agree with what you said. It's maybe still too early. Maybe it would be pushing it too much, starting with Coman.
All right, one final question. Will Bayern keep a clean sheet?
It's unlikely.
I think it's not such a bad chance. I mean, one of these days it's going to happen. I mean, you cannot be unlucky all of the time. I mean, there are problems, but with a little bit of luck, it's going to happen eventually.
Okay. I'm optimistic. I think against Nuremberg, we can do it. So yeah, I'm optimistic. Clean sheet.
I really think the defense has improved, despite Rafinha. but... Not, I don't think all the problems are solved, but I think it's more realistic. It's more, I think it's more likely than it used to be in the last couple of games.
I think against Bremen, the defense didn't concede it. That was on Neuer. So I think had that one chance not gone in, then that's a clean sheet. The idea of defending six at the back was a very sensible thing to do. This was just a freak occurrence of losing his concentration.
I get the feeling that we're one clean sheet away from the defense being solid, because it looks good for so many games until one moment happens and then that other team scored. And that's it. That's the only attacking moment they've had all game. So I think we're one clean sheet away from it kind of just coming together. And I would love for that to happen against Nuremberg and just finish out the year without conceding any goals. I think that would, if I was Kovac, I'd set that as like a priority, especially now that we've got some wins, some good convincing wins under our belt. I would make that a priority.
But I think if you make that your priority and tell your players that maybe work might just do the opposite, I guess. Yeah, I think it should be a priority, but it's probably not focusing even more on not making mistakes, playing even better on defense. Yeah. I think they just need to play confident. They need to play their offensive kind of football, and then it will come naturally eventually, I guess.
All right. Well, let's hope it comes naturally against Nuremberg. But that's all we've got for this week. Follow us on Twitter at SuperBayernPod if you'd like. Get in contact with us. Shoot us your questions. We'll be sure to answer them. Email us at SuperBayernPod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear any feedback that you have. Other than that, you can catch us on iTunes. You can catch us on Spotify, Google Play, CastBox, whatever podcast catcher that you might use. Find us on there. Listen. Leave a rating. Leave a like. Tell your friends and spread the word. And we'll talk to you next week.